black man with a library.com. I'm Chris Emery Balagoon. Revolutionary artist Emery Douglas's images are nearly 40 years old, but they're still as powerful as when Douglas first created them. They're dangerous pictures, and they're meant to change the world. Emery Douglas was a revolutionary artist of the Black Panther Party, and subsequently became his minister of culture, part of the national leadership. He created the overall design of the Black Panther, the party's weekly newspaper, and oversaw its layout and production until the Black Panthers disbanded in 1979 to 1980. Throughout the 60s and 70s, Douglas made countless works, illustrations, and cartoons, which were reproduced in the paper and distributed as prints, posters, cards, and even sculptures. All of them utilized a straightforward graphic style and a vocabulary of images that would become synonymous with the party and the issues it fought for. This month, the New Museum in New York City will be holding a major retrospective of the work of Emery Douglas, entitled Emery Douglas, Black Panther, which includes a variety of Douglas's work done while a member of the Black Panther Party. I had a chance to sit down with Emery Douglas at the New Museum as he talked a little bit about his history with the Black Panther Party and his exhibit at the New Museum. We're interviewing Emery Douglas, and Emery, let me just start off with this quick question. Describe your development as an artist.
Well, my development was basically not a trained artist, but basically something I used to do as a kid, like many others. I had no really professional training until I went to City College of San Francisco, and there I took up commercial art, which gave me a foundation in the different aspects of disciplines, such as figure drawing, design elements, also critiquing your art, and the printing aspect of art, production, all those things. So that was my basic foundation of any type of art that dealt with any real professionalism.
And how did you come into contact with the Black Panther Party?
Well, it was through City College of San Francisco. While there, I started to work with the BSU there, changed the name of the Negro Students Association to the Black Students Association, and they used to talk about the different programs and cultural events that went on at San Francisco State, which is about 5 miles from City College. And so we used to go out there, and Emery Barak was out there, and I started doing his props for his plays, was involved in the Black Arts Movement, during that period doing the flyers and posters and stuff of that, those different events. And it just so happens that they were planning the event that they wanted me to do the artwork for. And they asked me if I would come to this meeting. I went to the meeting, and they were planning to bring Sister Betty Shabazz to the Bay Area, Malcolm X's widow, to honor her. And so they asked me to do the image for this particular poster. And they said that we're bringing over some guys to talk about doing security. And when they came over, that was Huey Newton and Bobby Seale. Mm-hmm. And it was at that time that I knew that's what I wanted to be a part of. And so after the meeting, I asked them how could I become a member, and Hugh and Bobby gave me their phone number and address, and I used to catch the bus to Oakland, California from San Francisco, and go by Huey's house and hang out, and that was my initial involvement with the Black Panther Party. That was early January, late January 1967.
Oh, you already read my mind. I'm not asking that question right there. What year was that?
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because I want to talk a little bit about being in the Bay Area and what an exciting time that was in terms of the different revolutionary influences that are going on at that time. And it seems to me that when you think about the Black Panther Party, you're thinking about, and you look at that 10-point program, yeah, that document, you're talking about the synthesis of so many different movements, from Malcolm X to what's going on in Latin America and Africa, even to the Constitution.
Yeah.
Do you see a similar parallel to your work in terms of synthesizing the influence of going on in the San Francisco area with you in terms of putting it all into a post of what that you did?
Oh, absolutely, because it was a reflection of politics of the time and a reflection of the ideology and philosophical positions of the Black Panther Party. It was always grounded in that spirit. That art itself would not have existed without the Black Panther Party and the practice and the implementation of the programs and the determination to overcome the obstacles that we were confronted with, and also what was going on in the broader civil rights movement at that particular, and human rights movement at that particular time.
I just want to ask you a quick question, and this is just basically on our process. The Black Panther Party develops a newspaper, and your artwork becomes a feature stone of that newspaper. Could you describe the process of how was it to be working week by week? What was the process of actually developing those portraits that you did? Like, how did you think of these things? Did it start off with just a picture, an article? What was the creative process?
Well, initially, it started off with the pig drawing. Huey Newton had asked me, and Bobby and Phil had asked me early on, if they wanted me to draw a picture of a pig. They were going to put the badge number of the police officer in the community who was intimidating, harassing people. It just so happens that the first pig drawing I did was just a pig on four hoofs. And the badge number that we were going to put on there, the pig, that particular one, was the pig policeman that got killed when Huey Newton got shot, because he was notoriously known as a bad actor in the community. So that was the initial development of my drawing in relationship to the Black Panther Party. But I began to critique that particular illustration based on the little experience I had in City College of critiquing and evaluating your work. And so I thought about the fact, why don't I stand this pig up on two hoofs, put some pants on it, and put the badge on it, and keep the snort and tail, and put the flies around it, and it became the pig drawing.
And one of the most iconographic pictures of all time, because it spread like wildfire.
Yes, it took on a life of its own. It transcended the Black Panther Party, African American community. It became an American and international icon, national international icon for injustice and police brutality and folks just abuse by the state. Period.
Yeah. Just keeping on the theme of internationalism, it's very interesting. Looking at your exhibit here at the New Museum, I'm noticing the comparisons to a lot of other postal movements that are going on in China and Cuba. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about a little bit about those influences and your travels to those countries?
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to go to Cuba. I was supposed to go in 1967 when we were first initially invited. But because of the paper being new and not having the staff to work with me, I had to stay in somewhere else with. I didn't get the chance to make that. But I did go to China with a delegation. We went around 1976, somewhere around there, about, we stayed with about 31 days. But the influence itself is related to the spirit of the artwork that was coming out of that period, late 60s and early 70s. It was work that came from OSPAL organization, Solidarity with People from Africa, Asia, Latin America, which is out of Cuba, and they just send these amazing political forces around the world in solidarity with people struggling. And in some of the cases, they used to remix some of the work that I did. A lot of people thought that the Cubans that did it, but it was the work that I had did that they remixed. Also, there was works that came out of the Middle East, around the Palestinian issue, also around the the war in Vietnam during that period, amazing posters by the Vietnamese and coming out of that area and as related to the war. And so, and then there was the work that was really, initially I became inspired by was work that came out of China. And why was that? How did I get introduced to that? Was because when Robert Williams, who was a black man who lived in the South, him and his wife got in conflict with the racists down there, had to leave the country. And they went to China, one of the main where they stayed most of the time. and you used to see Robert Williams on the front of the T-King Review sitting with Mao.
Mm-hmm.
And so and then you would see these posters that they would sit on with solidarity with the people struggling, oppressed people of the world. And they have all these different ethnic groups and stuff in these posters. So I was kind of inspired by all those different forms of art, political art during that particular time.
Mm-hmm. You know, I want to talk a little bit about Frantz Fanon has that famous quote, revolutionary violence acts as a cleansing force for the oppressed. And one of the things that you see in your artwork is the presence of guns throughout the artwork. And the gun actually went through an evolution through the Black Panther Party in terms of the ideological evolution. Could you talk a little bit about like the symbolism of the gun and how it evolved around the Black Panther Party? And how do you think about it now differently, if any?
Well, it was just, the gun was a symbol of overcoming the obstacle of police abuse and showing the people in the community they had a right to bear arms. That was the second amendment of the Constitution. Everything we did with the guns was legal within the law, it wasn't outside of the law. And so, because Huey had studied law in school and Bobby understood law. And so, therefore, everything we did was based on the law. They changed the gun laws because of the Black Panther Party. So, in that respect, we were carrying out our constitutional rights at that particular time. Now, to your other part of your question, please give it to me again.
Well, I was thinking about the ways in which the gun had changed ideologically the relationship to the Black Panther Party, to revolutionary violence.
Well, you can understand in relationship to the abuse, it was a reaction to violence. It was in relationship to police abuse in the community, young African-American men being shot down, maybe petty crime they were involved in, running from the scene, no gun ever found. So you had this high rate of intensity all across the country in the communities where people were highly frustrated. So in that sense, the Black Panther Party carrying the gun and standing up to the police, it became a psychological thing of where they felt that now they could themselves be involved in such a movement to protect people in the community as well. So the gun was like a psychological overcoming the obstacle of psychological fear against the police.
I want to.
Hell no, I won't fight your filthy battles no more. Hell no. See, I got some battles of my own to fight for. Hell no,
hell no,
I won't raise your children and you no more. Hell no, cause I've got some children of my own to raise up. Hell no!
Hell no!
I won't fight your filthy battles no more. Hell no! You see, I got some battles of my own to fight for.
I wanna kind of change gears a little bit and talk a little bit about music. I was up in the gallery and I saw one of the pieces. It said, underneath one of them, the lyrograph said, "Nothing from nothing leaves nothing, got to do something." Yeah. And that comes from a song, Billy Preston, I think.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to talk about, what was the influence in terms of the music of that time, in terms of your artwork? How did that flow into it as well?
Well, it did. We used to listen to all the War, Curtis Mayfield, Marvin Gaye, all those music that had some substance to it during that period. We were involved. We appreciated it highly, and then we also, you know, there were those who did a lot of support performances for us of the Black Panther Party, such as Shee Lee before she was famous, Nat Turner before he was famous.
Yeah, Shee Lee, really?
Shee Lee just comes out school and do benefits.
Yeah. Really?
Way over there. Oh, okay. Merle Sanders of the Grateful Dead. The Grateful Dead himself used to do benefits for us in the earlier days. So, you know, we've all, and John Lee Hooker, So all of we've always had a understood the connection between broad support in the cultural sense in relationship to raising consciousness, also as fundraising and all those things, and did appreciate those artists who did make contributions to the party. Joyce Benson, for example, did some. Many of the jazz musicians on the East Coast did fundraising for us.
One thing is oftentimes forgotten about, and I think is really kind of interesting, is that it's significance of black women in your artwork. Black women figure prominently in all the work that you do, you know, which is really kind of, like, interesting and different, you know, because, you know, you're a male artist, you know, like how did you come into the consciousness or the being of portraying black women in a lot of these roles that are really different?
Well, you know, women in the party demanded their rights and position. They were saying that we on the front line just like everybody else. And there were women who were field marshals on security, not just washing dishes, taking care of the kids, but were involved in the same kind of activity that all of us have been on a daily basis. So that and learning from the experience of observing and reading from historical experience of some of the African liberation movements in Cuba, where women were involved in those struggles and what have you. But the core of it came from how the Black Panther Party looked at itself as not women being some entity that walked behind us, but they were our party. We were their other half, and they were our other half. Hmm.
And let me ask, also this is a point, because this is a question I'm trying for myself. The famous iconographic picture of the women with the baby and the rifle, is that something you developed? And they just spread out? Was that the original?
Yeah, that was one of the earlier ones. That was one of the earlier ones.
Okay, right, cool.
One, and it was a cover drawing that I did with the little baby with the gun over the shoulder and talking outside the window.
Good.
Yeah, that was one of the earlier ones.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. The black and white ones, as you can see, most of those are black and white, except for that one I just mentioned.
And obviously, and one of the questions I always have is that, you know, growing up, you know, during the hip-hop era, we see a lot of your work. I'm thinking particularly of the group in the band called The Crew, but they used that in the first album cover, that iconographic picture. But also I'm thinking of another group like Think of a Planet that used the intercommunalism and in that Blow Out Chrome album. You know, what are your thoughts in terms of the connections between the Black Panther Party and the hip-hop generation?
Well, actually, The Crew. Boots and Cool. We used to go to their meetings and talk with them all the time when they were evolving during that period. His father was an activist. I was actually a baby and during the 60s and what have you. So I was aware of them, and they were aware of the art, and they were inspired by the things that we were doing back in the day. Yeah.
That was cool. I just want to kind of bring it back to some of the stuff that you may be working on today. What's your work style? Do you draw every day?
No. I used to do that, but no, when I get the chance, I But no, and it's for a good while. You know, I was dealing with family who were elderly and sick, and so you have to manage that and put things in perspective, you know. So I always say, if the creed is willing, I would always be able to get back to the drawing board and do what I need to do, which I have done. I have some newer images of stuff that I've done in the last 4 or 5 years, which I'll be showing as a part of the PowerPoint presentation I think tomorrow evening.
I definitely want to be there for that. And let me just ask you. I guess, looking at it, say, like, how does it feel to actually have the major exhibit in New York City after all these years?
Well, in the mainstream, it's amazing, you know. But on the activist side, community side, people have always had an attachment to the work itself, but to have an organized exhibit in the museum here is highly appreciative in the fact that we're now reaching a new audience and being able to inform and educate and enlighten a lot of folks who had misinformation about what the Black Panther Party is really about.
And it seems that I was at the opening last night, and it seemed that a lot of people came through, or Mary Baraka came through, and a lot of the New York Panthers. It seems like you guys still are a pretty tight community after all these years.
Oh, yes, we do. We do. We have a website, It's About Time, the alumni website, gives you all the historical background on the party and what people are doing at different various times, and we just had the 40th-year anniversary about 4 or 5 years ago in Oakland, California, where people came from all the chapters and branches from all parts of the other parts of the world to that celebration.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm out of questions. Do you have anything to add, Jeb?
I'm
just
gonna.
Well, do you have anything you want to add?
Not really.
Well, I just want to. Well, thank you so much. I mean, I really appreciate it. And I guess let me see. I'm just trying to see what's anything else that I want to follow up on. Oh yeah, this is my last question. I just want to ask you. Yeah. I should have asked this earlier, but What makes art revolutionary? What makes art revolutionary?
Well, it's about change. It's about overcoming the obstacles that you're dealing with. It informs, it enlightens, and it educates people. It's like a tool for liberation. That's what it makes it revolutionary. It becomes another tool that you use for change. So in that sense, it becomes a revolutionary. It's about change.
Hmm. All right, thank you so much.
I really appreciate it, brother.
Okay.
Ha, 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 ha. 1-2, y'all, a 1-2, y'all. I check it, 1-2, y'all. It goes microphone check, 1-2, y'all. A horn of microphone check, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2.
That's it for today. Special shout out to Jed Brand of Big Character Posters, who did the photography. Amy Mackey and Gabriel Unsung of the New Museum. Also, an extra special shout out for the music, which was provided by Max Roach, Speak Brother Speak, Gary Box, Uhura Sasa, and the Blues Scholars with the Cornerstone. Emery Douglas' exhibit can be seen at the New Museum, which is located at 235 Bowie, in the heart of the Lower East Side. The show, Emery Douglas, Black Panther, will be up until October 18th. For BlackManWithALibrary.com, this is Kizembe Balogun. Peace.
People celebrate life despite poverty. Fuck the false prophecy. Promising we'll all be free as long as we fall in line with the flawed philosophy. The mystery, God's eternal. Afterlife's in heaven while living in hell where the militant dwell. Now the ranks start to swell in the hoods and jail cells. Lock down the campus cause it's right to rebel. No uprising fails. Each one's a step forward toward the victory. And at the end of the trail, we crack jokes while singing the blues and rock like the stone that the builder refused. To all area crew who carry the world on their shoulders on some Atlas shit, this one's for you. 206, rock on. The proletariat, rock on. Beacon Hill, rock on. Now the hustle on the corner set the struggle in stone.